Good morning, Ohio Valley. This is Dan Lima with OSU Extension in Belmont County.
And Karen Cox with WVU Extension in Ohio County.
Okay, and we've had a pretty busy week between the two of us. We've actually done a lot of oil and gas conferences and learned a lot of things. And, you know, we'd like to share some of our insights with you. But first, let's go ahead and get to the markets, as we always do. Otherwise, we forget. And, you know, there's plenty of people out there that want to hear what's going on, and rightfully so. So, Barnesville Livestock Auctions. This is from 5/30/2015. And if we are looking at the feeder calves for steers and bulls, 400 to 499, seven of those ranging from 200 to 240, 500 to 599, nine of those going from 190 250 to 241, 600 to 699, five of those, 162 50 to 290, 229, excuse me.
Yeah, it'd be nice if it was 290.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Not 299. I'm sorry about that. It's 190. So, all right, let me just do that one again. Okay, 600 to 699. Again, we're talking about steers and bulls. Five of those, 162.50 to 229. If we're looking at heifers, again, feeder calves, 400 to 499 pounds. Six of those, 142.50 to 215. Five to 600-pound heifers. Four of those, 173 to 190, and 600 to 700-pound heifers. Eight of those, 180 to 216. And let's go to the bigger one, the bigger class, 700 to 800-pound heifers, 152 to 185. Lambs, 20 to 50-pound lambs, they were going from 165 to 230. 51 to 70-pound lambs went from 145 to 221. And let's see, sheep, there were no sheep, goats, let's see, the, light kids, that's probably the biggest category we have here. Nine of those, 147.50 to 182.50. What is it, Karen? So using bucks. Okay. 23 of those. So we're looking at sheep now, 52 to 98. I've got to keep all the categories correct here. And hogs, very little of those. We had sows, only two of those, ranged from 225.50 to 229.
25.50 to 29.50.
Thank you, Karen.
Decimal places are important.
Too many numbers, but it looks like the meat market's still doing pretty good. So let's go ahead and talk about some of those workshops we did, Karen.
All right, so the Wheeling... So the Downtown Wheeling Commerce Association organized a tour, and I know I got that name wrong, and I do apologize that it just slipped out of my head. But anyway, we went on a tour of a drilling rig and got to learn a little bit more about how the process works. And it was a very interesting tour. We got to learn about how they get it to get that 2 miles underground, as they put it, to thread a shoestring 2 miles through a very small hole. And they do a very good job at that. A lot of computers involved and a lot of very sophisticated technology to keep it within their wiggle area, which is pretty narrow. So what they're trying to do is make their line as straight as possible, because then they're going to get the best results. And so their goal is to get in efficiently and get to their desired destination and then to move on to the next. They also try to drill everything all at once. So that's why those drill rigs sit up there for quite a while. They come in and they drill the first wellhead, the next wellhead, and they try to get them done all at once and then move on to the next site. That's less overhead for them, and it helps keep things more organized and causes less impact on the environment.
That's very true. And in fact, I was at a lecture from Dr. Chase, who is the chair of the petroleum engineering down in Marietta College. And he was talking about the shale development and the future of the shale development. And even though one of the points that he made was because of the reduced oil prices, that actually had an impact overall on, one, the number of rigs. So the drilling slowed down, and with the slowdown of drilling, you also have slowdown of the infrastructure required to accommodate that drilling. So heavy machinery, a lot of the contractors that set up things and bring drivers, water trucks, et cetera, for that. So it kind of has this chain effect on things. But his view is that it was mainly due to the infrastructure. So there's a lot of oil and gas production. You know, we see that here in Ohio. We see it in West Virginia, Pennsylvania. There's so much methane coming out of Pennsylvania. The Marcellus is still the leading methane producer in terms of shale. But then there's Texas, there's the Dakotas, where they're pulling out a lot of petroleum. So with all this development, you get to a supply and demand situation, and you had a lot of slowdown. In fact, the number of rigs in the state here have essentially halved, maybe even a little bit less than half of what it used to be. But with that, it's an infrastructure thing. So if you think about supply and demand, you know, we have a lot of these wet gases, so a lot of the ethanes, propanes, butanes, isobutanes, and these are more industrial use gases instead of natural gas, just the methane that comes out, and that could be put to use right away. So there's a lot of infrastructure that needs to be done to move these things. Otherwise, you'll have a drop in prices, just basic marketing and business. But the infrastructure is going up. One of the main lines that are kind of helping move all these products is the Rover pipeline. And with the Rover pipeline going, it's heading west around through Michigan up into Ontario, and even heading back east for a possible market of export. We'll see, you know, the prediction is that the oil prices will go up again and production will ramp up. So, you know, one man's good for some, bad for others, I guess.
Yeah, so I know a lot of you probably have been approached about having a pipeline go across your land. And just like when you're signing a lease for them to extract your minerals, you also need to very carefully consider the leasing constraints within what they're offering you to have a pipeline go across your land. And I really encourage all of you, if you have yet to sign a pipeline lease, to make sure that you are thinking about all of the potential uses of the land in the future. So even if it's not being plowed in vegetables or anything like that now, if, say, your grandkids or your great-grandkids want to be able to do that, make sure that you write in the opportunity for them to do that into your lease today. These things stick around for quite a while, and you don't want to restrict the future use of your farm to exactly what you're doing today, because we all know markets change, and we don't live forever, so the next person coming onto the farm might have a different idea. So try to make sure that the pipeline is buried deep enough, not just to meet the minimum recommendations, but deep enough so that you can utilize your property to the best of your ability.
Absolutely true. And it's very important to consult with a lawyer to make sure. The lawyer's job, again, is to put what's important to you in legal language so that you get exactly what you want. So it's because most landowners, myself, you know, we don't have that background, very important to work with a lawyer. So the first lease that the landman will typically present you with, that is a starting point, we like to say, for OSU Extension. So you get presented with a lease and a contract. What Karen said is very true. This is going to be an indefinite thing, typically for the life of the pipeline. As we like to say, you don't want any permanent right-of-ways. You don't want a permanent right-of-way because when you're signing your easement and your agreement with a company, you need to specify exactly what's going through that pipeline. So for the life of the easement, if natural gas or whatever the easement was for ceases to move that product, a good contract will terminate the easement right there so that they can't switch it with something else. So we at Ohio State Extension actually have a checklist that we like to present to landowners, and it comes with a further development of more information on each point. But it's just a nice little checklist for landowners that have operations, whether that be pasture, hay, or corn and beans. And you go through it, and it just helps identify what's important to you and what's important for your land and how you utilize your land, so that when you're looking at your initial contract, and again, these things are... That was my alarm. But so again, these things are very, they're very, they're indefinite. They could not only impact you, but they're going to impact your children, as long as the life of and I was going to say as long as whatever is being passed through that pipeline is still there. But depending on what you sign, you need to be very careful. Think about things that you want to build in the future. Do you have some ideas of possibly building a house for your son next time they get married in a certain area? Think about all those things and negotiate those things, because those things are going to be very important in the long run.
Also take into account what is currently on the property. If there is timber on the property, that timber does have a value, and you should be getting the value of that timber if it is removed from the property, and even potentially the value of the future of that timber. So if you have been managing your forest land to have high-quality timber, those trees are worth a lot more than you think they're worth, and you need to look into how to value those trees before they're taken off of your land. You also need to have a timeline laid out for the actual work to be done. You need to make sure that you specify when they can do the work on your property. If you have an active farm and you are getting ready to, and say you have a really great hay field that they're going to be passing through to set up their pipeline, you need to make sure that you have the opportunity to retrieve at least one cutting, if not two cuttings from that hay before they go in and tear up the land. So make sure that you're getting the full value out of your property by setting proper dates on your timeline and thinking about how you use the land and what you have growing there. So some other things we want to consider are, what are your liabilities for this? You want complete indemnification from anything that the company does or a third party does on the property as a result of the pipeline. And also hold in there that they are required to treat your land with respect, and they need to be cleaning up their trash. They can't leave waste. They have to restore so that you don't have erosion problems. All of these things need to be written into the contract. And also, how is the pipeline going to be maintained? How and where are they going to be accessing the pipeline? Because they're going to need to continue to get across your land. Who's going to maintain that right-of-way? And how are they going to inspect and maintain the pipeline? You need to define the boundaries for the inspection and maintenance activities, and also know the schedule. How often are they going to be coming onto your land, and when can you keep them off of your land? So if you're going to be pasturing animals and you have a bull in that field, I don't think they're really going to be wanting to be going across at that time. And you're also not going to want people trespassing with large equipment through when you have other animals in the field. So keep those things in mind when you're getting that lease written out. How about you, Dan? Can you suggest a couple more things for our listeners?
Sure thing, Karen. And one of the things you said, make sure you have a clear window of start and stop dates for the easement. Also, so you can plan what to reseed. But some more along the lines of starting and stopping, termination date for the easement. So you make sure you have a clear cut date of when everything's going to be done and you're going to be able to utilize your land again. Conditions for automatic termination, if such as failure to construct the pipeline. So is there going to be a timeline for this? If they don't do it by set date, well, they're going to have to redo the easement, things like that, so that you can plan your life ahead. You don't want to be in a situation where you're not able to get into your field, do what you need to do, because they could come. So having clear dates will allow you to be able to operate in your land and have a clear understanding of what you can do and maybe what possibly might not be a good idea because they might come in at that time. So again, what was that point? Clear definition for conditions for automatic termination and failure to construct the pipeline. So exact dates for those. Clear definition of actions or inactions that result in abandonment. So if they don't do it by set date, would that be an abandonment? If nothing flows through the pipeline for set amount of time, does that constitute abandonment? Because what you don't want to have is a permanent right of way where they can switch things off again. They can turn things off, turn things on, switch pipes. How many times they can go in is extremely important. So how many pipelines are going in your land? Are they going to put them all in at the same time? or how many times can they, or are they going to do one, cover that one, wait a year or two and go back in? That's not what you want. What you want is a one-time thing. Try to figure out how many pipelines they can go through and how many, and if they go beyond that, then there's going to be a renegotiation. So those things are very important in your contracts. And again, work with an attorney. Make sure that you can, that you tell your attorney what's important to you and that things will work out properly like that. And also things like removal of structures and equipment following termination or abandonment. So pig launchers, that's another thing. You know, where are they going to be? If this is going to be an above ground point on the pipeline where they can get in there and move things through the pipeline in case things back up, because it can happen. Where is that going to be? If it's going to be, do you want it at all? So those things are very important to know. Also things like compressor stations, the appurtenances is what they could be called in the lease. Make sure that you know if they're going to have appurtenances, where and what kind. You know, there's going to be, if you have a well pad, there's going to be storage tanks. Again, these things, just have a good map. Have a good map of your property. Have them require a map and exact location of the pipeline for your records, and so that you can plan around it. So think about fencing. Are you going to have to limit the number of cattle? Compensation for crop loss. Typically, one of the things that I've seen a lot in leases is a 5-year compensation period. Make sure that they make sure that they specify in there that they are doing the best management practices according to Ohio Department of Natural Resources for Ohio, because they don't, those are recommendations. They're not laws that the pipelines have to follow. So the good agricultural practice, not good agricultural practices, I'm thinking best management practices, excuse me. So the best management practices from ODNR, they're not required to follow those, but if they reference those on the lease, now it's part of the contract. And they will follow those.
And that's really important to have it read like that, simply because if regulations and recommendations do get updated based on new research, then they are automatically transferred and written into your lease. So if you use the wording of best management practices by a governing agency, then that is going to make sure that regardless of what changes happen, your land is going to be governed by those best management practices.
And then things, again, with those management practices, you got to think of things like drainage, fencing, gates, and those land improvements. Again, you're thinking, you have to do short-term thinking of when they're going to start, how long they're going to be there, and then long-term thinking of, once the easement's there, what can I do with this land? Well, you can't build anything on an easement, no permanent structures on easements. And that's the typical thing. I'm not going to say that's 100% always, but in general, if there's an easement going through, you're not going to be able to build anything. Also, if you already have a pipeline going through and they want to put another one in, you know, if they have a 500-foot gap between the two pipelines, that's going to affect a greater piece of land than just the easement itself, if you think about it. So in my recommendation, if you already have an easement going through a certain area, being able to put the second one, if that's applicable, closer to the other one is probably going to be a good idea, and it'll tie up less land for you in the long run.
Now, another thing I want you all to be very strong about is to not let the companies bully you. If a company comes in and says that, well, if you don't sign, we're going to sign with your neighbor and it's going to be this horrible thing and that horrible thing, you know what? This is just a scare tactic, and all they're trying to do is force you into a lease that you do not want. So what you need to do is, if they start threatening you that they're just going to go someplace else and it's going to be worse for you because it's going to be right up next to your house, and, well, you say thanks but no thanks and you close the door, and that evening, I want you to contact your neighbors and set up a community dinner where everyone comes together and talks about all the scare tactics that the company was using at your house and see what they did at your neighbor's house, because I'm sure they did the same thing. So make sure that you're strong and you do not let them bully you into a lease without proper legal representation and without giving you the proper time to look over all of the details and really think about how it is going to affect your land today, tomorrow, and in the next generation. Make sure that you aren't pushed into it. You make sure that it is what you need and that it reflects your needs for your land overall.
Absolutely. They're going to want the best deal. You're going to want the best deal. But it is your land. What you are doing in an easement is granting them access to your land. So you have the upper hand in terms of negotiating. You should never be forced into something, signing uncomfortably with that's unclear. Again, these things are indefinite. They could be there for easily your lifetime and post. Your children are going to have to live with your decision. So do not be rushed into it. Think about what's best for your operation, for your family, and for plans in the future. Think about all these things. And again, if you're not comfortable, never sign anything on top of on the hood of a car. Never feel that there's something that you can't negotiate, because everything is negotiable. Very important to know that. Very important to work with an attorney. And if you don't know, if something comes in the mail and you're not sure, never sign anything unless you're absolutely certain what it is.
All right, so let's just take this to another direction and talk about why pipelines are coming. I know that there has been a lot of talk about worries with pipelines, explosions, leaks, problems with the pipelines themselves. And these are all very real things that we do need to consider. But we also need to consider the dangers of all of the trucks on the road and recognize that these trucks having accidents, leaking into our streams, these cause explosions and leaks and problems too, with addition of running down our roadways. So we really do need to weigh the pros and cons of trucking the gas out versus using pipelines to get the gas out. So either way, there are going to be accidents. We are human and we are not perfect. So there will always be mistakes made regardless of how things are done. And so you need to weigh the pros and cons of the truck traffic versus the train traffic versus the pipeline traffic. And try to really consider the pros and cons of each one. And we have to get the gas somewhere. The gas is in process. It's being pulled out of the ground, and we're not going to stop that. So let's make sure that we do it right, and let's make sure that we think about the pros and cons of each of the different methods for taking the gas to its processing point. And also recognize how it is impacting the community, and recognize, too, that even if you absolutely hate the fracking industry, recognize that the people working in the fracking industry are just that. They're people, and they're people who need jobs, and they have families too. So, you know, everyone should try to be as polite as possible to one another. Don't hate someone just because they're here with the fracking industry. Recognize that they're people with families, and do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So if you have a problem, be polite about it, be professional about it, and get the problem fixed. Don't be nasty, and because that just comes back to you. And I don't know about you, but when someone's nice to me and has a complaint about something, I'm much more quick to fix it than if someone's yelling and screaming and telling me I'm a horrible person. I'm much more slow to react to that. So a little bit of honey goes a long way. So keep in mind that you need to watch your temper. And I know we all get upset about things, and we all have problems, but make sure that you're dealing with it in a professional manner.
You're absolutely right. And with the whole shale development here in Eastern Ohio, again, we are having an impact at a national level. One of Dr. Chase's points was that when we started drilling here in Eastern Ohio, you know, I'm going to say we, cuz I know you're out there, some of you are in Pennsylvania, New York, and But in eastern Ohio here, they actually pulled a lot more of those wet industrial-type gases than they expected. And right now we're at this infrastructure development time where we need to move those gases. A lot of them are being put or being liquefied, put on trucks and trucks somewhere. They're being hauled on trains. They're being moved to cracker plants, mainly down south. And again, we're at this infrastructure moment where we have all this product and we need to move it the most efficient way possible. So we're seeing these pipelines come up all over the place to help move all this stuff out. And it's at a national level also. That's why you have the Rover pipeline as an example is just one of the interstate pipelines coming through. And with that, you do have to understand it's very good to know what kind of pipeline it is. So when you're approached by a landman, just make sure you ask, what kind of pipeline is this? Is this going to be a collection line? What's the size? Where's it going? And then you can see, you can contact Karen and me, and we can talk about, well, if it's an interstate pipeline, for instance, you could be held liable with eminent domain. But the important thing is, again, what's important to you? And you can negotiate even with the possibility of eminent domain. Once, if you have a negotiating point that's very important to you, and it's not extravagant, and it's very important to you, they'll negotiate. Give them a reason why that's important. And even though it's eminent domain, you can always negotiate something with those companies. And don't let people pressure you into signing too early. You shouldn't just sit on it too long, but once you're approached, make sure that you talk with the family, talk to your neighbors, you get with an attorney. And again, we at the extension offices have things for you to help you go through the lease and figure out what's important to you. But you should always talk to an attorney and don't ever sign something without talking to your neighbors, your family, and an attorney. That's minimal right there. And again, so we're at this infrastructure development time where we're going to have fractionators, separators, pipelines, the possibility of the cracker plant here in Belmont County. And with that, you could spring up more industrialization around here. So there is a lot of potential for jobs in our areas too. And again, the crude product are coming out of our land. So very important to make sure that the beginning point of this entire process, which is going to be your backyard, is going to be dealt with in a way that it's not going to affect your life too much in terms of your operation. So keep those things in mind. The pipelines are going to be building a lot for the infrastructure development portion of things. It has a national impact. So it's getting a lot of pipelines are going to be interstate. And eminent domain could be a possibility. And with that, just make sure that you negotiate to the best of your ability and that you have proper law and proper representation on your side. So I know I've been blabbering on about everything. So I guess we're running out of time here. So
we're just going to wrap things up. And just a couple tips to remember, when you're doing a pipeline lease, you want a granting clause. You want to talk about easement location, limitations for the use of the easement, a timetable for the construction of the easement, how the maintenance of the pipeline is going to occur. You want to discuss landowner liability, termination and abandonment terms, miscellaneous considerations for all the other stuff. And of course, you want to make sure that payment terms are clearly defined. So I hope that you all are having a great week. I hope you had a chance to get some hay down before the storms hit this weekend. And have a great day, and we'll talk to you next week. This is Karen Cox from West Virginia University Extension.
And Dan Lima with OSU Extension in Belmont County.